So we've been talking about all these border do-si-dos, how there are a number of places in Canada where people are crossing provincial or even federal borders to get into other provinces, other countries, for, well, some reasons that maybe you shouldn't. A lot of debate over whether Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is in the wrong hopping over into Quebec to go to the cottage. Even though federal officials telling the rest of us we can't do that, we'd even be fined, and it actually breaks a Quebec law to do that, but I don't know, somehow, I guess it only applies to us mere mortals. Big exemptions to that Quebec rule, though, and I guess there's debate whether or not it applies to the Prime Minister, even though he wasn't doing it for work reasons. Essential services, such as medical workers. Should these rules just not apply to them in any capacity, or are there times when it's not even right for essential service people to cross over? Well, Wajid Ahmed, top medical health officer for Windsor Essex County, is saying, yes, there should be more restrictions even on medical workers, at least in the case of all the healthcare professionals who travel from Windsor to Detroit every single day. These cities are pretty much right beside each other, just separated by one river there. As of April 9th, Wajid Ahmed says that healthcare workers made up 88 of the 262 confirmed cases in that county. 40 of those are workers who traveled to Michigan. So about 20% of the cases are people who have been going, nurses in particular, from Windsor to Detroit. And we know that the people who are going to be hardest hit by this are people who are in long-term care facilities, people with the pre-existing conditions, and people who are frontline care workers. A WashingtonPost.com story tells the story of Renee Amiot, who takes 15 minutes to go door-to-door from her Windsor home to the Detroit Medical Center's Hutzel Women's Hospital. The 24-year-old nurse working 12-hour shifts doing neonatal intensive care. 1,600 nurses in Ontario cross the border to work in Detroit every day. That's their job. Should they be allowed to continue to do that? That health officer saying pretty much no, we need to scale that back. Our next guest is a doctor at one healthcare facility in Detroit, Dr. Justin Klamaris, joining us now, president of Detroit's Karmanos Cancer Institute. Doctor, thanks very much for making the time to join us right now on Canadian Airwaves. I know it's a very busy time for folks in your line of work. What are your thoughts on all the Canadian healthcare professionals you have working in your facility and other facilities throughout your city?
Well, good morning, Anthony, and good morning to your listeners. Thank you for bringing attention to this important topic. My response is that we are so grateful for the workforce that we have in our cities, in our city of Detroit and Windsor. We are really sister cities with one another. Our economies, our people are intricately connected. And for us, simply 25% of our workforce is Canadian. Without those resources, we would be hard-pressed to provide care for our patients.
Wow, that is a sizable percentage there, 25%. Obviously, the border closed. Justin Trudeau, Donald Trump making that agreement there to all but non-essential, and this has allowed nurses to continue to go back and forth. What is your response, though, to those healthcare professionals or to the public health officials on the other side of your border who are saying, yeah, we want to calm this down because it's actually bringing cases from Detroit into Windsor? Do you think that's a fair point, a fair argument to reduce those border crossings?
Well, I'm on the other side of what I think the end decision should be, but I certainly understand the cause for concern in Canada and across the world, frankly. We live in a global society today, and that global society means that for all the good and challenging in the case of COVID, we are seeing transportability across borders in every way that we can imagine. In the sense of the challenges that folks are facing in Windsor, in the province of Ontario, I can see the concern that you're living right next to a community that is, in the United States, certainly a surge city or a hot spot within the United States. We have seen we're above 27,000 cases in the state of Michigan now. I think in the case, putting my physician hat on and my public health immunologist trained hat on for a moment. Although we must do everything that we can to mitigate spread and do all of the things that pretty much all governments and societies are supporting, such as social distancing, et cetera, we have to recognize that this virus is amongst us. And in the case of essential health workers, what we are doing to protect them in terms of providing them with the PPE so they don't get infected, having testing available for staff, if staff do not feel comfortable traveling back and forth, providing temporary lodging for them if they would require that or want that, we are making those things available. We certainly understand the cause for concern back home, but I know in my own community, coming in and out of the front lines every day for work, I feel as though I'm able to protect myself using that special equipment that we do have ample supply here in our region in the state of Michigan. So I understand the cause for concern. I said to a reporter earlier, I'd like to think that the cause of service of healthcare doesn't know a border, but I certainly understand that all people, all governments need to protect their people. So those two priorities, in my view, have to be balanced.
Our guest is Dr. Justin Clammers. He's president of Detroit's Karmanos Cancer Institute. We're talking about the surges in Detroit in the state of Michigan and the question of whether or not nurses in Canada should continue to be able to travel every day back and forth across the border. Doctor, while I have you, I want to ask you just more particularly about the surges that you are seeing in Detroit in your state right now. Are you optimistic that social distancing measures are working for your state and that the worst will be behind you in the coming days? How is the curve looking there?
Yeah, we have certainly seen the rapid demand and spike in cases from last week, and the rapid increase in demand for acute care services, patients coming in and out of into the hospital, needing in many cases ICU services. The demand for that at all of our large health systems in Michigan has started to decline, and we've seen that reported daily for the last several days. I think that as we see testing more available, we will continue to see cases rise. The focus of testing, at least in many parts of the United States where access was limited, was to do inpatient testing. So if patients came in with symptoms that were suggestive of the COVID infection, we rushed to try to get inpatient testing. As we have more outpatient testing available, we will continue to see cases escalate, but the good news is that the acute demand for critical care services, for inpatient care, has started to tamper down over the last last week, and we hope that continues. But it's important to know, I think, for all communities, we need to keep these social distancing practices in place as long as we can. And ultimately, I think all public health officials recognize until we have vaccination available, we can see surges and increases in these cases intermittently while this new virus is among us.
Dr. Clammers, before I let you go, I just want to ask you one more question, more germane to you being at a cancer institute rather than, ER frontline coronavirus cases. I've heard from some nurses in Canada, other healthcare professionals, they're concerned about having to postpone other treatments, people who are having some form of cancer treatments being postponed, pushed back for obviously various reasons, the surge in demand for the healthcare system, leading to this broader societal conversation of whether or not the cure is worse than the disease in terms of there being some negatives affecting our health in other aspects. Can you tell me what the Karmanos Cancer Institute's doing to mitigate those concerns?
Sure. And I think the real obvious thing is that cancer isn't waiting for the COVID virus. So we know that patients with active need for therapy, we've continued treatment for those patients. We have patients from Canada who are receiving therapy at our facility for a specialized transplant and immuno-based therapies that we have contract with the provincial government for. Yet we are seeing some types of elective cases cases being delayed, and that's for one really important point. We know that if cancer patients get this infection, that they have a much greater chance of being hospitalized, of requiring a ventilator, and unfortunately dying if they get the infection. And that's true for patients with cancer that have the most aggressive forms of therapy that really impair the bone marrow's function to make protective white blood cells to fight infections. Those patients are particularly vulnerable. I think what we are looking at now, knowing that cancer hasn't waited while we deal with this issue globally, is we need to quickly pivot back to providing essential cancer care, getting back to all patients, doing so in a manner that's going to require new forms of isolation and special protections for patients, also more widespread testing, even for asymptomatic people, to make sure that they're not bringing infections into our hospitals where patients are with weakened immune systems or infusion centers. So it is a real challenge. I'm happy to say that broadly the global cancer community is coming together, sharing information rapidly to try to provide the safest and best practices to ensure care for our patients.
Well, Doctor, you certainly have your work cut out for you right now in these extra trying times for folks in your field. So thanks very much for making time for us this morning. We appreciate it, and all the best to you and your facility.
You're welcome, and to your listeners.